The conversation about what it means to be fat has changed a lot in this country in recent years. More people are touting body positivity. More parents are talking about not using the word as an insult. But our next guest believes none of that goes far enough in fighting what she calls the anti-fat bias that has such a powerful grip on us all. Virginia Soul Smith is a journalist and author of the new book, Fat Talk: Parenting in the Age of Diet Culture. It's a paradigm-shifting book aimed at changing the way parents talk to their kids about weight, health, and self-worth. Soul Smith says it's not our kids or their weight that needs fixing, but the way that we all think about body size and value. I spoke with her more about it, beginning with her own story and how it led her down this path.
I started in women's magazines, so very much belly of the beast, as it were, with diet culture. This was the early 2000s, so it was less like aggressive best beach body sort of stuff, though that was definitely in there, but it was a lot about portion control and eating locally and a lot of carb anxiety, you know, going gluten-free, whole grains, all that kind of stuff. So that was the starting point.
So when did you sort of realize that this was all part of a bigger problem, that you actually weren't okay with a lot of the things you were being assigned to write?
Yeah, it was tricky. I mean, I think in those years, I was really doing what a lot of us do, which is thinking, okay, I don't want to do crash diets. I don't want to make people feel bad about their bodies, but there has to be this way to eat that's like this, you know, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle plan. And what I hadn't really grappled with was how much all of that was still organized around eating in pursuit of thinness and how that meant that body size was really controlling how I thought about my own body, how I thought about other people's bodies, and my relationship with food. For me, the turning point was really becoming a parent and starting to think about these issues in terms of how I wanted to raise my own daughters. And there was a moment when my older daughter was about 2 years old and I made an offhand comment to my husband about not liking my body, you know, all the postpartum stuff we go through. And she repeated it back. And I had this moment where I thought, oh, this is how we pass this on. This is how diet culture gets handed down through generations. I want to break this cycle. I want to do something different. And so that really made me take a real left turn in my journalism and start looking more closely at what the science said about the relationship between weight and health, realizing that these things are not as synonymous as we've been led to believe, and realizing that so much of the entire conversation, including, you know, that first decade of my career as a health journalist, was being driven by anti-fat bias.
Anti-fat bias. So this is like a real mind bend for a lot of people, right? Because of, I mean, obviously a lot of reasons they're very embedded in our culture, but probably also because the conversation in this country around health and obesity, we've heard for so long, there's like an unofficial war on obesity from a public health perspective. And you actually, even in your Substack newsletter, write obesity with an asterisk, right? Like it's a slur. I wonder if you can kind of introduce this new way of thinking about these things.
Sure. I do that out of respect for a lot of my readers who find that word really to be a slur, to be a word that's been weaponized against them by the medical community. You know, the Latin root of the word obesity means to eat oneself fat. So there is a stereotype about fatness and fat people embedded in that concept. And we have seen that stereotype in the whole set of misconceptions we all have, this idea that weight is just a matter of willpower and calories in, calories out. Any mainstream obesity researcher will tell you now that is not the case. The body size is largely driven by genetics, and that actually intentionally losing weight is not possible for the vast majority of people. The data is very clear on this. But because we have all these stereotypes about who gains weight and what it means about their lack of willpower, their laziness, their eating habits, when we talk about weight in this medical sense, we further all of those biases about fat people. So for me, it's been really important to just reclaim the word fat as a neutral description of my body, even as a positive description of my body, and just say, yeah, I'm fat. We can take the power out of that. We can stop making that something to fear. Now we can talk about health in a way that isn't so rooted in all of that bias.
That's so interesting. Let me dig into that a little more with you, because I think this is the key, right? Like you argue, so it's not the same thing. Like being healthy is not the same thing as being thin. Being unhealthy is not the same thing as being fat. Do you get pushback on that? Like what about, you know, health risks associated with obesity? Like would public health experts kind of argue with you here?
Oh, there's tons of pushback. This is not a decided question, but that's because the bias has been informing how the research gets done for so long. But when we look at the data we have, we don't have data showing a causal relationship between high body weight and poor health outcomes. Mm. We have strong correlations between these two things, but that doesn't mean the body size is driving the poor health outcomes, things like diabetes and heart disease. And it definitely doesn't mean that weight loss is the answer. Mm. What's more likely going on is that there are independent factors contributing to both the higher disease rate and causing folks to be in bigger bodies than they were a generation ago. And this may be larger changes in our food supply and our environment. It may be things like experiences of chronic poverty and oppression, access to healthcare. These social determinants of health have a much bigger impact on our health, and they are not matters of willpower. They are not, can you just put the donuts down or any of that? Mm-hmm. Those are larger systemic issues we need to address to improve everybody's health.
Okay, so then let's talk about kids. Your new book is about sort of how to talk to your kids about weight, about health, about self-worth, and all of these things that are tied together, and how to change that conversation. Where do we begin?
I think reclaiming fat is a great place to begin. It stops making our bodies this battleground and instead says everybody deserves body autonomy. Everybody deserves to feel safe in their bodies. And then when we think about kids and we think about these future health questions, I am concerned about rising rates of type 2 diabetes. I am concerned about heart disease. But I also know that I am really concerned about the rising rates of eating disorders. Mm. So that means taking weight out of almost every health-related conversation we have and instead focusing on the things that are really driving health outcomes. Sure, increasing vegetables, increasing outdoor play, all that sort of stuff is great for kids, but it's great for kids in all body sizes. You don't need to be thinking about weight or weight management to have a healthy lifestyle. And in fact, you're going to do your kids many more favors by removing that stigmatizing aspect of the conversation.
Hmm. So what do you make then, Virginia, of the new American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines around childhood obesity, which are much stricter than before, sort of advising doctors to treat childhood obesity much more aggressively than before, including with medication in some cases? What's your reaction?
I'm really disappointed in the American Academy of Pediatrics. I don't think this decision and these guidelines are supported by the evidence. I think they're ignoring decades of research showing that childhood experiences of dieting and weight-based stigma are the top predictors of future eating disorder risk. We have research going back to the 90s that's showing even kids who diet at a, quote, moderate level, so this is the types of plans that are being encouraged by doctors and by these guidelines, are five times more likely to develop eating disorder risks. This is a huge mental health and physical health issue. So it's really disappointing to see them doubling down, but it's not surprising. There is so much money at stake here. Huh. We are talking about weight loss drugs worth millions and millions of dollars. And I think there's no accident that the FDA approved Wegovy for use in kids ages 12 and up just a month before the AAP released those guidelines encouraging its use.
So it sounds like if we look at this from a bigger picture standpoint, it's a very big shift in our perspectives that you're calling for here. Are you essentially trying to redefine what's healthy here and how we think about what's healthy?
Absolutely. I think we need to understand that for too long in this country, health has been a resource. It's been a privilege. But in terms of how we talk to our kids about a healthy relationship with food, a healthy relationship with food means nutrition isn't the only objective of every meal. Community, connection, time with loved ones is a big goal of every family meal. And giving your kids the chance to say yes or no to foods, to have that sense of autonomy in their bodies, that they get to listen to their bodies first and foremost and can trust themselves around food, that is very health promoting, both in terms of their relationship with food and in terms of their relationship with themselves in all sorts of arenas. I want us to think about body autonomy and body safety first and foremost.
All right. Virginia Soul Smith, the author of the new book, Fat Talk, Parenting in the Age of Diet Culture, joining us. Virginia, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for your perspective here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.